Welcome to the Kathy Donovan Sessions. I'm your host, Kathy Donovan. We're talking relationships, secrets, superpowers, and we're setting ourselves up to live life fully. Let's get started. Well, if you asked me one word to describe Julie Keon, it would be the word true, because I've known of Julie for a long time. We've gotten to know each other over the years, but everything she does just seems to be so true to her nature. Welcome, Julie Keon. How are things in Cobden, Ontario for you today?
They're wonderful today. Yeah.
We're all navigating so much during this pandemic pause. And, you know, I particularly wanted to talk with you because what you do in your life on the daily, in your profession, everything just seems to be so beautiful and heartfelt and human and true to your beautiful nature as a true mom. That to me is everything comes from that nurturing energy. So just to tell folks, you are a life cycle celebrant, you are becoming a grief counselor, and you have loads of experience as a mom to your beautiful daughter, Meredith, who was born medically fragile. And you and your husband, Tim, have been exemplary parents. Your family is so beautiful, so tight, so solid. So I think it kind of begs to go back to sort of the early days with your daughter. You've written a book actually about your experience called What I Would Tell You, and we'll talk about that as well. But just go back a little wee bit and talk about, you know, you and Tim planning to have your family. Then what happened?
Well, prior to having Meredith, I was a birth doula. So Meredith, when I became pregnant with Meredith, I was still attending births and looking forward to experiencing birth myself. And I think I attended my last birth 6 weeks before she was born. And then we were having our December baby, and Meredith had a lack of oxygen right before she was born. And this caused a hypoxic event, which led to a very profound brain injury.
Okay. And so
that's it in a nutshell.
Right. Yeah. And so life begins. And as a parent, you know, I know my brother and his wife, their eldest son was born with cerebral palsy. And it's in that instant moment you meet your child. I mean, this is your beautiful baby. And somehow we're going to figure this out. It's got to be how you go at it.
Yeah, I mean, initially she was 5 days old when she had an MRI, and they told us that she, you know, would be severely affected and that she would likely have a very severe form of cerebral palsy. And I think initially, I mean, we were completely devastated, of course, because I remember sitting with one pediatrician while I'm holding this beautiful newborn, because she was so beautiful. And the pediatrician said, you know, your daughter isn't going to do anything. She's not going to walk. She's not going to talk. She's not going to eat. She won't work. She will never be independent. And I remember that day, you know, feeling crushed and panic, of course. But then I remember the specific moment, you know, driving home in the car. My father was driving me home from Chio at that day. And I remember looking across the fields, and the sun was setting. And I remember just getting this swell of like, we're going to give her the best life. However this all turns out, we are going to make sure she is happy, that she doesn't have pain, and that we give her every opportunity that we can for her to have a really great quality of life, however long that is.
And you're true to your word, my friend, true to your word. That's what you and Tim and your extended family and circle have done for Meredith. How many years ago was that now?
She was born December 5th, 2003. And when she was two, they said she would live probably to be age 7 or 8. And she will be turning 17. This December. Yeah.
I mean, I almost have no words for it. It's just emotion pouring out of me right now. Just for the the beautiful love that you have for your daughter, and I'm sure she does for you, and the appreciation for the challenges that you and your husband and your extended family and circle have navigated over time. And I remember you talking about the book that you wrote called What I Would Tell You, and you were discussing that, you know, you were at the hospital and you were making notes, I think. Do I remember correctly? And you were writing about her or something, and you saw another family?
Oh, yeah. So in 2011, we were at an appointment at CHEO, and I was sitting in the waiting room getting Meredith ready to go home, and she just couldn't tolerate being in a car seat, and we live 100 kilometers from Ottawa. So it was a really stressful appointment. I was stressed. I had her over my shoulder. She was throwing herself back, and it was just a really hard moment. And I noticed somebody watching me from across the waiting room, and there was a mother holding an infant who looked a lot like Meredith, that reminded me of Meredith as a baby. And there was a man sitting beside her, and he was trying to help. And they were both, the mom was looking right at me, and I looked at her, and I walked by her, and I knew that she was looking at me like, oh my God, this is my future. That's my future. And I had the same experience in that same waiting room when Meredith was a newborn. And I saw a mother coming in with her son who was using a wheelchair. And, you know, he had cerebral palsy. I could tell that. And that mom pushing him in, and he looked about 14 or 15. And I remember having that same feeling of panic. And now I'm looking at this mother who's looking at me, who's, you know, 7 or 8 years down the road. And so that was the day I went home and I wrote this essay called What I Would Tell You. And it just flew out of me. And within 24 hours, I had about 100 messages from all over the world. It just went crazy, because I basically was writing about what I would tell you as a new mother about this journey. And that eventually turned into a book.
Yeah. And I mean, so many people need to know what you would tell them about your experience, because, you know, in any stream of life, we're looking for other lampposts to hold on to as the current takes us along. We're looking for somebody who gets us, somebody who we can relate to. And that, you know, I admire you greatly for making that happen. And you've since connected with organizations and groups to do public speaking and share your experience, right?
Yes, yes. I really connected with a group called Hope for HIE, which is out of the United States, and deals with families whose children are given a diagnosis of hypoxia, which is what Meredith had, resulting in a brain injury. So I've traveled, you know, to mother retreats and things like that to speak and to offer, you know, circles and just to, you know, just to connect with these mothers who are often, you know, earlier on in the journey than I am. I mean, we're a bit of an anomaly simply because Meredith wasn't expected to live as long as she has. And so it's a bit isolating where we are, because a lot of our friends who we knew in the early years, their children have died. And so we're still in this place, but we are alone because not a lot of our kids live this long that are this complex. So right. It's a bittersweet place to be.
Of course. Yes, totally understand that. Can you describe what your day-to-day life is like?
Well, our day-to-day life now is fairly, I would say it's fairly normal, you know, compared to other families. Meredith does not go to school. She never has. But we have caregivers, private caregivers that come in and are here from 9 till 5. So Tim works and I work as well. And I work from home. I've always worked from home. Tim now has been working from home for a few months. So so we also have night nursing too now. So I do sleep. So that helps a lot. Yeah. But the first 10 years, we didn't have that much help. And so we've really gotten used to having lots of help so that we can still have a fairly normal life now.
Yeah, and have some resources to give your daughter, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just a puddle on the floor.
Yeah, yeah, and she doesn't want to hang out with us all the time. We're not as fun anyway. The caregivers are, you know, they play and do crafts and all those things. And that's not me. I'm terrible at that stuff. So,
well, you're good at many other things. Let's talk about how being a life cycle celebrant, life, easy for me to say, life cycle celebrant, how did that find you?
Well, I was asked in 2012 to help our local, you know, region to officiate marriages as a civil marriage officiant. And I looked at that as a huge opportunity. I love weddings. So I started officiating marriages, and I think it was probably at my 10th wedding, I had a funeral director who was there as a guest ask me if I would do funeral ceremonies. And so that's where I switched gears then, and I embarked in the very in-depth training as a life cycle celebrant through the Celebrant Foundation and Institute. And it's an 8-month training to learn the art of ceremony creation. And I specialized in funerals, end of life.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, your experience in the delivery room all the way through life dealing with your own family situation gives you this, I don't know, like, I guess we'll use the word compassion. It's kind of an indescribable factor you have to have in order to be able to, you know, embrace all these cycles of life, all these experiences that all of us have. And, you know, I love that it kind of takes a little bit of the edge off, the mystery out of it, when it's someone like you who, you know, is a regular person and not somebody wearing a cassock and a collar and, you know, a bit intimidating maybe. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I grew up in a small town, and I just grew up with parents. My mom is a retired nurse, and she, you know, when people were at home dying, you know, my mother would send my sisters and I out. You know, I remember in the winter going out with a casserole. We'd go down, you know, down the street to whoever's house needed it. And also being taken to wakes and funerals regularly, just because that's what you did. You know, if somebody in the community died, my sisters and I often sang at the funerals, and we sang at weddings. And I think my mom was like that, as far as that traditional way of doing things. You know, if somebody's sick, you bring food. My mom was never afraid to talk to us about death and dying. And my father is also a lot like that, as far as he doesn't shy away from those things. And so I think we just all naturally grew up with, you know, death is part of life, and you show up for people.
Yeah.
You know, in those times.
Yeah. Well, it's a great lesson we all need reminding of, especially at this time, you know. And people say, well, you know, I don't like going to hospitals, I don't like going to funerals. Well, I mean, it's not about what you like. It's about who you're showing up for.
Yeah. I mean, my husband doesn't like doing dishes. Neither do I. So, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I don't like washing dishes either, but it has to be done. I mean, you know, and that's true. A lot of people will say that. I don't want to see my friend who's dying. I don't want to go. We also live in a culture that denies the reality that we are all going to die.
Right.
And we don't even like to say the word die. We always say they passed away. We lost him. No, he died. And we are going to die. It's okay to say those words.
And it's okay to die. Hey, tell me a little about the Death Cafe. I forgot. You were doing Death Cafe sessions for a while.
So yeah, Death Cafe I didn't start Death Cafe. I offered them in this area, and Death Cafe started in Europe. I should know the date of when it started, but it's been a few years. I've been offering them in Renfrew County for about 6 years. And basically what it is you invite people to come, usually to a cafe, or I do it at a health center here. You provide tea, coffee, and cake, and you sit around and talk about death. Gives people a safe space. You don't ask questions. You don't promote services. You don't facilitate. You don't charge money. And it's amazing how quickly a bunch of strangers together will start talking about all aspects of death and dying, and 2.5 hours will fly by.
Wow. And who comes to the Death Cafe? What's your audience like?
I've had 25-year-olds who are terrified about the thought of dying come. I've had 80-year-olds. I have all different religions and faiths. I have, you know, different couples come together, or individuals. More women than men tend to attend. But it's really a huge variety of people. Yeah. And it's like I offer it about every 3 months. It's like my community service because I bring decadent homemade cakes.
Right? I wish so I lived in Renfrew County suddenly.
I know, exactly. But that's what keeps them coming back, I think. Serve nice cake and like go for
delicious
the cake.
I love that. Hey, Julie, let's talk about the underpinning of your life. You know, a lot of what you're doing would be described as sort of spiritual work, you know, non-material. We're dealing with the non-material when we talk about death and we talk about birth. What's the underpinning of your life? What are your beliefs?
Oh, that's a big question. I was raised in a church. I was raised Catholic, and I don't consider myself religious anymore. I would say I'm spiritual, but I also have a very strong part of my brain that gets really uncomfortable when I say that too. But the fact is,
why do you feel uncomfortable about being called spiritual?
I don't know. This is something I struggle with.
Okay.
I haven't figured it out yet. but I do know that I have been witness at births and at deaths. And I know that I feel the big energy that is part of those sacred experiences. I see the energy of emotions of people, you know, discovering something within themselves when they've been struggling for so long. So when I'm, you know, with people doing one-on-one sessions, I see the shifts that happen. That's all energy to me. And that's kind of what I believe in, that we all are made of this beautiful energy that doesn't get destroyed. I think when we die, I think it's a big energy that comes in. I mean, I never felt I had to go to church when I was attending birth. And that's honestly, when I was witnessing human beings being born, I would often forget what I was doing there because I might have been there for 30 hours doing labor support. And then when the head would be crowning, or if it was a cesarean birth, and you know, I'd look over the curtain to see this baby emerging from this woman's body.
Yeah.
Never gets old.
Sacred.
Never got old. Sacred. Yeah. And it's that same energy when I'm with people now who are dying and I'm sitting with them and they're talking to me about, you know, about their lives and what they've learned and their fears and worries about dying. And I think I'm sitting in the sacred energy as a soul is starting to let go.
Now
I'm getting all the shivers again.
Yeah. but it's truth. And I feel like, and I'm getting them now too. I get goosebumps when it's truth. It just runs through me. I have to acknowledge it. And I love everything you've just said because it you know, we share it in common in a way. I was raised in the Catholic Church as well. In fact, I went to a convent for high school, mainly because I was sort of a bad kid. But in any event, the nuns were my heroes. I loved every minute of it, but not because it was a Catholic convent, but because they were just really good people. And I have since, too, you know, taken my own experience, my own, you could call it an adventure of trying to figure out context and what this is all about. And I, too, believe in divine energy, that it's all energy. And before we come here, we're energy. And when we leave here, we're energy. And in between, we're energy. It's just a matter of recognizing that and understanding that ultimately we are spiritual, meaning non-material beings having a physical experience, having a human experience.
And absolutely.
Yeah. So you've got the full whack of experience in your day to day, which I think is, you know, is just beautiful and brilliant. And I love breaking down those barriers. I love helping people unlearn what they think they know to be true because, you know, especially as a Catholic, we were taught so many things that I just feel are not true. And I'm bursting at the seams to share with people the exciting news that you do not do anything wrong and you are not being condemned, that it's all good and that life is meant to be a joyful experience. You know, look at your experience, what cards you and Tim were handed and how you have created such a beautiful, you know, joy-filled life for Meredith and for you and your family and your extended circle. You know, it's truly so inspiring and I appreciate everything you're doing. One more time, we'll mention the book, What I Would Tell You. Where is it available?
I have it right here, in fact, right beside me to show you.
Yay. Yes.
And these are our hands, Meredith and my hands, that Tim took that photo. It's available at Singing Pebble Books in Ottawa. And then it's also available on Amazon.ca or .com.
Okay, for people who may not live in the area, that's really good, good, good stuff to know. Julie, if people want to connect with you, we'll put some information up to share your website and information. And I just want to thank you for doing this beautiful work you're doing and for being the beautiful soul you are. Appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate spending time with you. I always call you Miss Kathy. So I appreciate your time and your beautiful energy.
Oh, thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
You too. Bye.
I really appreciate you being here with me today. If you enjoyed this session, please subscribe and share with a friend to help me spread the good word. For other episodes, visit my website, kathydonovan.com.